From internet fraught with danger, two heroes brave the void to bring you the Digital and Dice Podcast.
This is the Digital and Dice Podcast for Monday, November 12th, 2018, and show number 166 is Go. I am your host, Mark Boutet.
And I am Insert Brian here.
Indeed. And if you are one of our wonderful lucky viewers here, whether you're catching us live or whether you're catching us next on the video on demand on YouTube or Twitch, you can see that we are standing in basically the brand new studio setup. Yes. Astute viewers will note that we still have our wonderful wall of nerd back here.
It's
with our soundproofing and our other things. But also on the other side is our little shelf with all of our gaming paraphernalia and
it's
other such.
Also soft.
And we've taken a lot of time off, and I wanted to say thank you for those of you who have stuck with us over this time, whether you took this time to go back and listen to some of our older shows or whether you're brand new to us. We wanted to say thank you for joining us, and we hope that the new setup is that much better than it was before. So without further ado and without rambling on like a jackass, let's go ahead and move on. So
where we ramble like jackasses?
Yeah, that. Yeah, let's do that. So first off, Brian, what have you been up to lately?
Well, I've been pretty busy with having moved. Me and Dammit moved in together. But
congrats, yeah.
In the fun side of life, I have also stopped playing Skyrim for a little bit. Gotten a little bit of Overwatch time in, which has been an absolute treat. Got control of... figured out how to use my girl Symmetra again since they rebuilt her.
Nice.
As well as I got myself the Soul Wars box set for Age of Sigmar.
Yeah.
And have been putting together my spooky ghost buddies.
Absolutely. I'm actually really excited for this because, for one thing, I love Nighthaunt. I love
their models are so cool.
It's just such an awesome army. It looks great. The rules are cool. And I'm really excited to go up against it because I've put together my army of death rattle. I got me scaly boys and they are rootin' tootin' ready to go. Or sorry, rootin' dootin' because of their dutes. They have so many dudes. Because it makes sense that skeletons blow horns.
That's okay. My ghosts have bells. Ding, ding, dong.
You see, that makes sense. They can make noise with bells. My guys have no lungs, and they are duting. Duting intensifies. So, yeah, there's been... I'm actually really excited to play that, and especially now due to the new gaming table.
I've got some Bretonian bits if you need actual horns.
I have plenty of horns.
Oh, good.
They all came with dutes.
Oh, they actually came with dutes.
Yes.
Excellent.
So many dutes. It's great.
The one thing also need lips to dute.
You would think, right?
Or well, a lower actually, jaw. I know you need lips to dute.
You would think you need a lower jaw as well, but my guys are making it happen.
I mean, if you had lips and muscles around it,
no,
you
no
could
skin,
still do
no
without
lower
a lower jaw.
They just hold it up to the hole that is where their face should be and suddenly dude.
Well, you know, fucking magic. We don't have to explain shit.
Right. So, yeah, that's actually really great. I'm excited for it. Again, as we now have the table, we'll probably try to get some of that out to you.
Ooh, I also found out, like, why all of the Age of Sigmar stuff looks so, like, skull predominant and spooky looking because friggin' Sigmar had Nagash build everything. All the buildings were built by Nagash.
Right. So we'll get to that in another point. We'll probably have a discussion here on the show just about Age of Sigmar and some cool stuff about it. But for now, and yes, for you in the chat, A Skeleton, we are going to see what we can do about a skeleton dude emote because it needs to happen. So yeah, we are really excited to get this moving. We're happy to be back. We're really happy that there are people here when we came back. But we wanted to shout out another thing that's going to be happening here very shortly. For those of you who are listening live, this coming Saturday, it's actually, I believe, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, there is the Going Ogre Board charity stream by the Golden Bolt and some of the guys over at Crymore Gaming. Moriarty specifically, I believe, is going to be on there for quite a bit of it. But the Golden Bolt is doing a bunch of streams, one on each day, fairly long on each one, where more than a 24-hour stint. It's going to be 3 days worth of stuff.
It's going to be Shrek-tastic.
It is indeed. And it's all about raising money for children's hospitals and the Miracle Network. So, you know, they're going to be trying to raise money. They have some really cool prizes they're going to be giving away from their sponsors. And it's really exciting. And as a matter of fact, for those of you who maybe caught the last one where I went on there and read the entirety of Sonic High School.
And it broke him in the most beautiful way possible.
It took me 6 hours and I literally had a breakdown at like 3 a.m. And it was, there's a Twitch clip of it. It's amazing.
It's marvelous.
But I will be there this Saturday from about 1 p.m. Pacific time onward, probably close to about 5 or 6 p.m. Pacific as well, on the stream, reading out yet another terrible Sonic fan fiction to them. So please join up. And if you have a couple bucks you want to throw in, it'll be really awesome to support it because, you know, if anyone's ever been in a hospital, it sucks. And if you're a kid being in a cold hospital room with nothing to do, that sucks even worse.
Yeah. So it really, of the sort of charities, it's one of my favorite forms is like actually helping out kids who are in the hospitals. They're already in the worst situation, so it might as well be having fun.
Yeah, so join us for that. Know that the charity event is actually going to be running into the beginning of, I believe, the beginning of December. So if you don't catch it immediately, catch up with it, check in. There's a bunch of different people from YouTube and Twitch that are streaming in support of this. Check out @goingogre on Twitter, or you can go to www.goingogre.xyz and you can see the stream right there. You can chat, you can donate, you can do whatever you want there. But it's a great way to help out a good cause.
That's great. Do it.
Yes. But on that note, why don't we go ahead and get moving on our main topic?
Our main topic, you say?
It is exactly what I say.
Oh, well. Well, our main topic for today is, in fact, GM201, Citizens of the Realm, Regions and States in Your Campaign World.
Indeed. So what we're going to be talking about today expands on a previous discussion we had about world building and developing like countries and government styles and such like that. The last time we talked about it, we talked about like, okay, well, you've broken your world into multiple different regions, and now you're going to throw a different government structure into each one of these regions. Like you might have a meritocracy, an oligarchy, a majocracy, a theocracy, whatever. And we talked about it in kind of a top-down, very vague level. So today we're going to be expanding on that by talking about how to break up those existing worlds and existing countries and such into like city states and regions and such like that, and how to make them unique and interesting as well.
Well, yeah, first off, what we really need to do is you look at the larger picture and then you break that down into smaller regions.
Mm-hmm. That's the easiest way to do it. Is if you've already taken your map and broken it up into this country, that country, etc. Well, now take a zoom in to one of those countries and say, okay, just like in the real world, there are multiple regions that have their own specialties. You know, you look at areas of our world where even a small geographic area has multiple distinct cultures with their own little eccentricities and unique things about them, whether it be because of the surrounding terrain, whether it be because of who they were when they migrated to the area, stuff like that.
The history of an area, as much as the terrain of an area, shapes what the people that therein reside. Look at Louisiana. We see people living in the bayou. Their culture is significantly different, even from other people that are within a couple hundred miles of that same region.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons why we're talking about this is because it's just another thing you can do to increase the variance and to give your player characters more options to play, more ideas on what kind of character they can build. Because, you know, you can say like, oh, you can be from this country. Well, that country is like a generic fantasy setting. Think like, you know, Middle Ages Europe, a little bit more advanced, you know. But then it's like, okay, well, even Middle East, you know, Middle Ages Europe had different cultures that made up that were fighting amongst themselves, that were decidedly different, not only in the level of technology they had available to them, but their religions and other things that made them very unique.
And in fact, the funny thing is, what we view as nations, by and large, are more of a modern interpretation of everything. Mm-hmm. It was far more likely that a region was considered more of a city-state, even when they had someone that they had to there an answer to. Mm-hmm. Being a Londoner makes you worlds different than someone from York. Right. Or looking at... It wasn't until, like... I'm really gonna screw up my history here. It's really later on in history that there was a country of Germany as opposed to all the nation states.
Well, you had Hungary and Austria, and you had the other things that were around the area until
they
actually unified.
Don't forget Liechtenstein.
Right, then they unified and became what is known as more of a modern-day Germany.
Well, Liechtenstein's still separate.
Right, right, right.
They're tiny.
Anyway, more of a city-state type thing. But this is something where you're providing more information. You're going deeper and building structure into your world that makes sense. This is the kind of thing that really does register with a lot of players because it's something they understand, and it's okay if it's a bit of an anachronism, if it's something that doesn't quite fit into a fantasy setting or medieval Europe or whatever.
It's totally okay if it's an anachronism because we're talking about a fantasy setting right here.
Yeah, generally, you know. So, and as mentioned in the chat, you know, statehood versus nationalism. Exactly, we're talking about microcosms within your areas that are very specific. Now, because we are talking about a fantasy setting, because we're talking about fantastic things, we get to do some really cool stuff, and we actually get to focus on some other things that are really important. But let's kind of start from the top level. Like if you have your map, right, and you have your kingdom, or say you have an empire.
Okay. We've got an empire right here in this little imaginary map, if you will.
Yeah. So we have this empire, and within it, it covers a lot of area. You could even say the vast majority of a chunk of your continent is controlled by one single empire and have tons of variance within that. Because the great thing about empires, again, if we're doing correlation to the real world, is empires would go out and spread out, and sure, they would bring their culture and some of the, you know, their knowledge and whatever with them, but there were a lot of empires that would then leave the cultures they found mostly intact, with a couple like, oh, well, you just pay us taxes and you can do whatever you want, you know. And not all of them were like that, mind you, but
what, the Britanno-Celts, who weren't fighting the Roman Empire, ended up being quite successful in maintaining their cultural identity.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Weird.
So you have this empire, your kingdom, whatever it is, and it's spread out and it's going to control all these different areas. Now, storyline wise you're going to have a reason why this empire has taken over this area, whether it be just land acquisition, whether it was because they needed the resources, what have you. You know, your storyline reason can be as varied as your landscape, but make sure you have an idea of why the empire controls this land and either not more of it or less of it.
Well, there's always the catch-all of fantasy God wills it because they actually will it.
Also true. Another thing to think about is when you have this empire that controls all these different areas, is it something where, like, their rule is all-encompassing? Does that government make decisions for everyone, or do they instill local governments into those areas? Like, do they have a more of a feudal lord-style thing where you have barons, baronesses, and duchies, and dukes, and such that are enacting their own laws locally?
And that question actually is totally outside of the alignment of whatever that empire is.
True.
An empire can be wonderfully benign and still micromanaged down to the village lawkeeper making sure that it follows the letter of the law to help benefit everyone. Or it could be an absolutely tyrannical despot who is like, no, I want to know that they're going to be selling the cabbage at this price. And
right.
That's going to come to me.
And that's the great thing about it, is that your local government could be corrupt as hell, even in a kingdom that is ruled by a benevolent, good-aligned ruler. It does. Everyone likes to delegate. you know.
And bureaucracy breeds corruption.
Yeah. So the idea that, you know, you have all of these different areas that are under this rule, make that decision. Say, like, do they send people for oversight? Do they send wandering tax collectors? Are there, like, are the local government people in actually placed there by the overarching government? 40K does it where they instill planetary governors and they say, you go here, you rule this planet, and you give us tithes. However you do it, we don't care. Just do it.
Does your empire have, like, wandering magistrates like the old Kung Fu movies where the guy would come in and be like, this seems awfully corrupt here.
Right. And then, you know, beat some heads and do whatever. Or as mentioned in the chat, the Empire in Star Wars, you know, they take over planets, police them, but for the most part, they leave a lot of things alone, aside from being terribly racist and destructive.
Well, I mean, they had representation that was then eliminated and then put into the bureaucracy of following specifically the appointed governors.
Right. So there's a lot to think about when it comes to how your places are going to be run and how they adjust things. And welcome to the chat, everyone who is joining us now. We're really glad to have you here. So to move on, we're also talking about what makes the area unique. For example, you've broken up your empire, your kingdom, into these different regions. Well, you're going to be encompassing a lot of different landmass types. So mountains, forest, rivers, you know, etc.
Are these countries formed by the land features, or were they formed in a political way where there were lines on a map that then have to deal with the fact that on either side of this particular set of mountains, you have two opposing cultures that actually hate each other. They're now all part of the same country and have to follow the same laws, while also having maybe like some sort of shadow war through the passes of this mountain range.
Absolutely. And of course, alongside that, we're also talking that each of these different landmass areas could be something very unique to them. It could encompass a swamp that has some magical property that the empire needed for some sort of research it was doing, or possibly that forest was a resource heavy area that they needed to control. And thus that's why it ended up within the boundaries of this empire. You know, different races all living, whether happily or not, together in this area can breed a lot of interesting story.
I love the idea of a residuum mine underneath a swamp.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
As we're moving forward, we will be discussing a little bit about some plot hooks and stuff towards the end of the main topic. For what it's worth, by the way, if people are chatting and we're not able to see it, I blame our Restream chat for not being able to see it. I can see part of our chat going on over there, but I actually can't read it from here. So I apologize if I miss your question or your comment, but we are attempting to use some new equipment.
We're good.
Okay. Let's talk about, for example, you know, the area that they're working in. Say there is some magic landmass, so say a dungeon or something like that. That in and of itself can shape the region in a different way. If there's a set of ancient ruins, right? You know, ancient ruins, the adventurers flock to them, which means that the economy of the area is going to be different. The people who are there are going to probably be a lot more varied and different, just culturally, because of the constant influx of people searching for gold and you know, honor and glory.
Yeah, mega dungeons.
Right. So if you want to make each region in your area unique, sprinkle in a couple cool things like that. Not everything has to be an interesting town, but with that in mind, think about how you can make the towns or the city states themselves interesting by nature what they are. One thing that I would love to chat about, and this is something I've been kind of mulling over for like the past week, is the idea of citizenship in your D&D game.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, not going to take this down any bad road, and we're going to avoid a lot of real world stuff if we can. But the idea that I'm going for here is when you think about citizenship along the lines of, say, Starship Troopers, right? People are you know, you have the option of becoming a citizen, whereas you will gain new rights and the ability to vote in their elections and such.
The difference of a citizen or civilian.
Right. You are just a resident here unless you become a civilian. Now, think about this in your fantasy setting or even in your futuristic setting. If you want to do a Starfinder game where, you know, this planet, like if you show up and you're just a visitor, you're a civilian. You don't get rights, you know, or you get a lot less rights than people who are a born citizen or who became a citizen. But if you then think of it in the fantasy setting, think about the idea of a floating city where the people who were born there or who have become citizen have been magically branded with like a glowing tattoo. Only the people with these things are allowed access to 90% of the city. Other people can show up and trade with them, but that's it. Like you are bound to one district unless you have a citizenship tattoo. You know,
okay.
This is the kind of stuff that can make that region just amazingly different than anywhere else in your campaign world. And it's such a small area that you can confine like different adventures to it. You can have them show up, maybe even have an entire adventure that the player characters are attempting to gain citizenship of this place to gain access to its resources.
And also by putting this in your campaign world, you're also allowing your players to be from this place. If one of your players is a citizen of this floating city, it doesn't matter where they're going. If they have a glowing tattoo on half of their face, they're going to be able to be recognized. If there's anyone who doesn't like this city, suddenly you've got a plot hook of you have immediate contention with this entire faction.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do with that. And it's just from that one minor change of saying, you know what, this one city is different in this region and they can still be under the rule of law of your empire, your kingdom. They still pay their tithes. Maybe they are providing a resource or a benefit to the kingdom at large, but then they're left alone to do their own thing. Because again, this is like the mages of the Kirin Tor style thing from the Warcraft lore. You know, you have the mage city that does their own thing because messing with them is a terrible proposition. So, you know, this is just the idea where you can say this place is different. And that's just another example of how you can do that. You know, one common way to do it, and as mentioned in the chat, the idea of splitting your area into the rich or the highborn, and then the slaves, the scum, the slum area. You know, that's a very common one to do.
You can totally put a caste system into one of the cultures of your campaign world, and this allows there to be like four or five cultures within the same geological location. The exact same location is going to have five different cultures that all have their different tropes, all have their different belief structures, mm-hmm. and languages, practically, when you break down to dialecting things.
Yeah. So, you know, an example of how this has been done in existing worlds, Faerun does a great example of having different regions in their world that have different dialects, different abilities, skills that characters get differently for being from a different country or even a different area of that country.
In other pop culture, Wheel of Time, Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time book series, the Carrion, they have the people that live in the noble districts of their main city, and then they have the people that live in the later built Foregate, where it is vastly different cultures mm-hmm. all interacting with each other to make this this strange dichotomy of a country.
Exactly. Another great example would be, say, how Critical Role and how Matthew Mercer has built the Dwendalian Empire and the Menagerie Coast, with the differences of how characters can feel and sound different just depending on where they've been born in the same area. You know, there's a lot of interesting things you can do with it. And overall, what we're talking about today is that when it comes to your campaign world, we would urge you to, once you've taken that step of saying, this kingdom is like this, take that next step, start fleshing it out a little bit more, and say like, okay, sure, this is a standard fantasy setting area, but what makes the people who live on this side of that empire different than the people who live on the other? Are the orc tribes who are constantly fighting on the western border, are they like, Are the people who live over there hardier and more dour folk because of the fact that they're constantly under duress from these assaults, and they view the people on the east side as being, you know, they're soft and they don't understand the rigors of living in a dangerous world, because they are in the more padded and controlled and secure parts of this kingdom.
Maybe a culture that hasn't experienced volatile warfare has got a lot of pent up aggression, and their people are prone to dropping into a duel at the drop of a hat, no matter what.
Yeah. So, and I believe that's actually the Wheel of Time.
Indeed. That's Altara.
So the idea of breaking up your campaign world and just adding that level of depth means that you as a DM also have some ideas when the players go to these places. It's easier for you to be able to describe what the place is like. You've already had this mental picture of saying, oh, they're in a town over here. Or even if you throw a town in just, you know, ad hoc while you're playing, and you're like, well, we're in this region, so the town is more likely to be like the area around it, and it gives you a framework to work with.
A really easy way to help you out on being able to do this even on the fly is when you're looking at the regions of your country, treat it like an NPC. You've got your two-sentence NPC.
Yeah, you have a two-dimensional area, and then you make it three-dimensional when it becomes important.
Yeah, but giving you that 2D, like two-sentence blurb that you know about that region gives you something to develop. It puts a seed that you can then turn into the flower of the terrain.
Yeah, exactly. And the easiest way to do that, like we were mentioning before, is you take your campaign world, you take your map that you're working on, and you just break it up into sections, you know. This is like counties and districts and states within the country, and then make each one have a little bit of interesting thing to it. Maybe there's a little bit of a rivalry. Maybe they even have border crossings within themselves. And, you know, if you have an empire where you can only move from one region to the other when you have travel papers, this is an excellent way of taking low-level players and forcing them into situations that they are either having to bypass security stations or acquire diplomatic travel papers to get from point A to point B.
Or earn adventuring credentials to be able to go from one district to another district.
Exactly. You know, this is something, again, there are correlations to how that actually works, you know, worked in the real world, you know, even up to, you know, I will butcher it if I try to know the exact, but even into some of the eras in Japan where you couldn't travel into a different region unless you had specific documents saying I am allowed to travel, you know.
Yep, and that's things that happen in the shogunate era.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of cool things you can do with that, you know, and the idea that, you know, having those towns that are melting pot areas, or, you know, as mentioned in the chat yet again, the New York in the 1800s, lots of different immigrants coming in, workers from all different lives coming in, melding together into this new culture. Well, you know, it's great, and you can use that in your campaign. If there's a central port town, for example, those make great places to be that melting pot location where all of these different cultures are clashing together. And that's why things like Freeport are great settings for adventures, because, well, it's exactly what it is. People from everywhere are showing up, getting into fights, causing problems, and these basically mean adventures.
Hazardous Endeavor spoiler for you. Mark always puts a town named Davenport into every single campaign game he's ever run. And we haven't ran into it yet, but we're going to run into Davenport, and it's going to be one of those towns where you see the cultures mixing.
Absolutely. There's a lot of cool stuff I'll throw in there, so, you know, stay tuned for that.
Davenport.
Before we move on to the next thing, though, I do want to talk a little bit about some plot hooks and ideas that you can use and just kind of run with it. So the idea of and as actually brought up in the chat before I move on, the idea of the dragon heist adventure, what they did is they basically said, you know, here is how the city functions. Like, here are the rules. Here are the things you must follow while you're here. And the players get access to those, so they know what they can and can't do while in the city. And the closer you make your campaign to being in a small area, the easier it is for your players to actually have a list to follow. Because if your players are constantly going from one country to the next, to the next, to the next, eventually they're going to forget which ones it's legal to duel people in and which ones are okay, you know, fighting sentient beings.
Welcome to Duloc, such a perfect town. Here we have some rules. Let us lay them down. That actually is a fantastic example, because by having a small area, you're able to be familiar with what you can and can't do, what would be considered seedy, what you're going to have to go to a criminal underground to be able to do. Because let's face it,
what's contraband?
Adventurers are always just right on the edge of being absolute psychopathic criminals.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the lawful good ones.
What happens when you show up at a town and weaponry is illegal? You cannot openly carry weaponry. And the barbarian with the greatsword is like, okay, well, you'll pry this sword from my cold dead body. And they're like, I guess you're just not getting into town, are you?
The paladin with the Holy Avengers probably going to have some mild beef with this.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you can do with it. And we urge you to get down really into the weeds and play with some of those ideas and make some interesting things. So to do that, here's some plot hooky ideas that we've kind of developed, just to give you an idea of how you can use like different cultures and city states within the same country that makes it so you'll have something to do with it. One of the ones that I was thinking of was you have your kingdom, you have your empire, and within that there are the forge complexes of the dwarves, the allied races of the dwarves that have become part of this empire as an agreement to supply arms and armor to the empire at large. The equipment that the soldiers and the militiamen and all that is all supplied by the forges of the dwarves up in the northern mountains. Well, one day those forges go dark, and the whispers from the people in the towns are all talking about how they are now attempting to revolt. You know, they're done. They don't want to move forward with it.
Oh, that's nice. There's also a town on the fringe of a kingdom. Used to be a wandering nomadic tribe that settled down and is having disputes with the surrounding farmers over missing cattle. Things like where you've got a culture that has now settled in with an area and they're now at odds with the more settled in farm folk.
Yeah, so the idea that you would have like a nomadic tribe, think of like you have the large, ruddy skinned, long haired, muscle barbarian types who have now settled down into a more sedentary life. And now they are getting into disputes with the more calm farm folk who've lived in the area for generations. You know, now that's an interesting problem where you're getting that culture mash, and the players might have to be the ones to get involved because, well, when you have a bunch of used to be marauding barbarians and then you have a bunch of farm folk, well, that's a little bit of an uneven fight and tempers are going to flare.
Well, that's the thing, though. But what if the farm folk are actually the reason? They're just assuming that
the instigator,
my cow died. Oh, it has to be those marauders that have settled in. Mm-hmm. Marauders are literally like, we've gotten this pastoral area. We're raising our animals and we're trying to settle down. And farmers are now gathering up all the crowd, pitchforks and torches and everything.
Angry mob style, yeah.
And the Empire sends the adventurers in to settle this dispute. Obviously, there's something wrong here, and you need to go take care of this barbarian horde that has moved in.
Absolutely. So there's a couple ways you can manage with that. And again, that gives you this feeling where everyone is members of the same country. They're all part of the same empire. And one thing that we briefly mentioned before was the idea of a consolidated rule of law. Again, dipping into the Critical Role side where they have the Crown's Guard that are constantly wandering everywhere. They're everywhere in the empire, which means, instead of having local militia, you have the Crown's Guard. They're the people who come in and hold the law down everywhere in the empire. So having the fact that, okay, maybe the overarching law here isn't able to handle this, or maybe they're just incompetent. Maybe adventurers are the law.
Maybe the bureaucracy has failed the people, and so the people have gone around the bureaucracy. Maybe there's contention between the Crown's Guard and the actual people who are solving the problems. Maybe by being an adventurer and helping out a couple farmers, you suddenly become a dissident element.
Right. And so that can even launch itself into its own side quest, or the whole quest could be about the fact that maybe you've just done goofed and now the Empire's after you.
Admittedly, it's easy for me to vilify the overarching empires. It's sort of...
Yeah. It's a common thing. We've all been, a lot of us were born in the era.
Good too much.
A lot of us were born in the era of Star Wars and things where the Empire is always a big, bad, evil thing, whether it be a Final Fantasy game, Star Wars, any number of other things where the big, bad Empire is the thing to be fought, not necessarily defended. You know, but again, turning that literary convention on its ear can also be really fun.
Yeah, totally.
Another one is the idea of having a region. This idea was kind of born from the idea of having a region in your kingdom that is inhospitable, somewhere that, you know, people can get into, but it's not necessarily the best thing. So the idea I had was for the Swamp of Echoes. This is a hotbed of criminal activity. People would go in there and never come back, or there's rumored to be roaming gangs in there that have made it their home. But the Empire can't go in there, or it's much more difficult because the magical aura of the swamp repels metal. So the people who live in there fight with wood and rope and stone. You know,
I like that. It's fun.
And it makes it for an interesting adventure where a party would have to go in and literally not be able to carry any metal on them. You know, whether it be the buckles on their clothing, the weapons they're holding, the gold, the money, anything that they're carrying that would be metal, they have to find a different equivalent to make their way through this adventure, which can make that one area feel so much different than everywhere else in that campaign. And I think that's really important, is to have those areas where you can throw a character in, and sure, they've been mowing through all the bad guys and they've been doing all these great things, but there's this one place where you have to go, where you can't just fall back on the same tricks that you've been using for the rest of the campaign.
I now am envisioning a small town that works a lot like an old Gold Rush town that's built into this in this swamp, that they've set up this network of large metal posts that gather that nascent magic together. So inside this town, you can have metal. And it is tombstone.
Yeah.
But then the posts themselves become this valuable thing because they're gathering up so much nascent energy that they then become a resource that can be sold.
Yeah.
If you can safely get it out of the swamp.
Like suddenly there's magnets. You know, add that into your fantasy world, see how that goes.
There's already magnets. There's lodestones.
But the idea of taking that and running with it, there's a lot that can be done there. So the Swamp of Echoes idea is just throwing out there, again, a region of your world that can be different by being part of the same kingdom and yet different, unique in its own right. As mentioned in the chat, the Underdark is another example, which for that part, I mean, if your kingdom or your empire has laid claim to an area of the Underdark, I mean, for one thing, ballsy fucking kingdom.
I like this kingdom. He's best.
Yeah, but the idea that, you know, your empire, your people are trying to eke out a living there, and the party has to go in and be like, okay, well, first off, this is a terrible idea, but if you're gonna be here, I guess we're gonna have to defend you. You know, that could be a great way of adding more depth to your campaign by throwing them into an area of the Underdark that is attempting to be actually contained and have cities in there.
I see what you did there with the depth.
Yeah, thank you.
That is funny, everyone, because he was talking about the depths of the kingdom in speaking about like the depths of lore, but really he was also meaning that it goes down a lot because the Underdark is underneath. See, now they can all laugh at the joke.
Nice.
Sorry.
As Draconic is mentioning in the chat, magnets, how do they work?
Miracles.
Miracles indeed. So overall, the idea of adding in different regions and city-states to your world can be as easy as just mentioning that this town has a very deep well and it's famous for its clean water, or going as far as to saying it's a floating city with the citizenry who have glowing tattoos. You know, take it to 11 if you want to. Not every single region has to be, you know, super spectacularly amazing, but they should be different enough the players will remember, oh, hey, did we ever go, when we were in that town, you remember the town, the one with, you know, every door had a depiction of a different colored dragon on it.
So what changes a culture of a specific area if you have a fairly podunk town that underneath it has an Aboleth has lived for the past 1,000 years.
Yeah.
That's going to leave a visible
Lasting impression. Yeah.
A lasting impression on the people there, even if they're not directly interacting with the Aboleth.
That's a bit Innsmouthy, I believe.
It is absolutely Innsmouthy, and there's nothing wrong with that.
There is not. So yes, one way or the other, we urge you to take that extra, you know, extra look at your kingdom and remember that it doesn't have to be just a map with a couple cities sprinkled on that all are the same architecture, that there's, you know, it can be so much more. They can be unique and interesting areas within the same kingdom that still have the same feel. You know, the people are still citizenry of the same kingdom or empire, but they live in such a different place that it means that someone can look at it and go, ah, you're from here, aren't you?
Ah, you're from Rock Ridge.
Right.
I can tell because of the smell.
So overall, that's what we urge you to do when it comes to creating your campaign world, when it comes to fleshing out that little bit, you know, take that extra step, you know, and of course, take ideas from, you know, popular media, various things, you know,
plagiarize.
Yeah. For the, you know, take what you want, think about it, twist it a little bit, make it your own and make it so that players will remember the interesting ideas that you had or the way that your campaign world fit together and yet was still filled with so many interesting and unique ideas. So the concept of that, that's what we're going to leave you with today. But it does mean we're going to go ahead and move on to the Twitface Mail Tumble Site Plus.
My stars!
Which soon will not be the plus. It'll actually just be the Twitface Mail Tumble Site Discord because Google Plus is going away.
It was here in the first place?
Right.
So we have answers to show number 165. When did you creatively use game mechanics?
I would like to point out, though, that for the astute listener or viewer, we did technically already have an episode 166, but there were technical issues that prevented us from releasing it.
The mics were rubbish.
Yeah, there were some problems. So instead, this is the episode 166 you get, and that's why we're going to be answering questions.
166, redo.
Yeah, these are the responses to episode 165, and of course, there'll be another question after this. So, Sir Jeffers responds, says, finally got to use create destroy water in a D&D campaign to douse lanterns around my party while leaving the enemies in the only source of light. Needless to say, sneak attacks were on point from everyone.
Nice. I like it. And create destroy water is a marvelously underestimated spell.
Indeed.
If you want to get your GM cranky at your creativity, that's one of them.
Absolutely.
Ryan, a party member used acid splash on a control panel so it melted and the pursuers couldn't catch up. The good old Star Wars trick of if I shoot that control panel, it might do what I need it to.
Yeah, shoot the control panel. It won't lock the door open. It won't, you know, enact any sort of emergency protocol. It'll just lock it. That's what it does.
It sometimes works.
Yeah. Moral Truth responds, when I jumped around while firing a P90 in CSGO and eliminated people that way, they got moraled all right. Yeah, splash damage and spray and just the spray and pray nature of just close your eyes and shoot and hopefully a couple bullets will land where they need to.
That's not how I Call of Duty at all.
No, absolutely not.
Grim Ace, using a portal hole and a jar of air to create a tower
to survive.
To survive a tower crashing over the party and I.
Yeah.
I like it.
That is a clever use of an extra dimensional space and a jar of air to keep people alive. I dig.
I dig that as well.
MChief30 says, having a character that can breathe water, sees a room filled with poison gas, casts control water and makes a water bubble around their head, goes into the room with the poison, gets all the treasure. Yeah, that is a way of using real world logic and physics in a fantasy setting to say, you know what? I guess the gas isn't going to permeate water. Totally a legit strategy. Why not?
Yeah, no, I like it. I like it. It's good outside the box thinking without actually taking advantage of anything, really.
Yeah, you're not breaking the game. You're coming up with an interesting and inventive solution to
a
problem.
You're clever girling it.
Yeah, good job.
Desmond.
Hi Desmond.
Back in the day, I was playing through Metroid Prime Hunters on the DS.
I'm so sorry.
My bumper was broken, so it would only fire every couple of clicks, which made the boss fight very difficult given the travel time of the elemental weapons the game wanted you to use. However, I figured out that every X hits of your standard pew-pew blaster would actually cause a point of damage as long a long slogging war of attrition later, I dropped the bastard. However, in completion stats in the credits, it said that the boss battle was unfinished.
The fact that it lets you finish the game even though it did that is interesting to me, but I dig.
Turns out I found an exploit and skipped the entire second half of the fight where the boss transformed in response to X elemental hits. So yeah, clever game mechanics, yo.
Yeah. That's it's interesting to me. It's like from a completion point of view, that seems like it would suck. Like if you like, oh, you really wanted to get 100% completion and you got screwed out of it. On the other side, as a speedrunner, I'm interested to know whether that would save any time or what would be in that.
I think the long slogging war of attrition might pick up your speedrun there.
I don't know. I've seen some weird stuff be done in speedruns.
Speedruns are weird, kids.
Games done quick, folks. They're great. Check out their YouTube.
My God.
So once again, thank you again for all of your responses. But once again, we do have another question that we'd love to ask all of you.
Indeed. Yeah. And this question happens to be, what is your favorite fictional nation or city state?
Yes, indeed. As we are, of course, talking about nations and regions and being very specific,
nation state,
we would love to know what your favorite nation or city state or city like fictional wise is, because there are so many out there, from Hyrule Castle, Princess Peach's Castle from Mario. You have all of the fantasy literature out there. My specific one, I'm going to go ahead and go first here, is Zeal from Chrono Trigger. You know, I mentioned Flying City before and the idea of citizenry, and this is a blatant difference in caste system as well, from the idea that they're the people who live above, and then the people who live below, anyone who's left below is basically like scum. You know, like, oh, we don't deal with people
scum
who don't
of the
live.
Earth, the low.
Right. But the idea of Zeal, and not only from the concept and the art of it, but also the music that went in with it, was just a masterpiece. And I love the idea and the feel of how they made Zeal this like ancient yet very advanced civilization that eventually, you know, spoiler alert for a game that's 20 years old, crumbled. But it, in and of itself, Zeal was such a great idea, and I've wanted to utilize something very similar in a lot of games. So stay tuned on how I might, you know, futz with that.
Well, for me, I'm gonna have to go over to good old Sir Terry Pratchett and Ankh Morpork. I love it for its grime, its crime, and its absolute lack of common decency.
Man, I thought you were going to take it. I thought you were going to be the crime, the grime, and Sir Vimes.
Also Sir Vimes. Duke Vimes.
Duke, yes. Duke, well, Duke Vimes. Depending on where you are in the books, yeah.
Yes. Well, spoiler alert, because some of those books have been out for an awful long time.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. The statute of limitations is a little off. Yeah, of that.
The Guards Guard series has been something that I've been listening to on audiobook via work, and has kept me sane in, you know, somewhat monotonous job.
Yeah, although I do have to agree, Ankh Morpork is a great city. I actually have a copy back here of the complete Ankh Morpork, which is the guide to the city with maps and advertisements and all this stuff. It's really great. It's a very hard to find book at the time, but I do recommend, if you're interested in Discworld, you do pick this up. And if you want an idea of how to make a believable fantasy city with very kind of steampunk-esque styling to it, look at this book and use this for player aids and ideas, because it's fantastic.
Oh, and it's got the map in
it. It's got a massive map. So yeah, definitely take a look at that. So I approve of your answer 100%. But once again, we would love to hear from you, dear Digidicers. We want to ask you this question, which goes a little something like this.
What is your favorite fictional nation or city state?
Indeed. And as we near the end of the show, we are going to do our shout outs. And first of all, we'd love to shout out to our wonderful Patreon supporters.
Thank you, our patrons.
Yes, indeed. So first off, thank you to Astonishing Legends.
Gold Bolt.
Desmond.
Hi, Desmond.
Hi, Desmond.
Patrick M.
Mm-hmm. McMind Flare.
Bo2Go.
Square Bear 23.
Yeah. Chubby Wildcat.
Odd Shape Channel.
Vertail. Mm-hmm. And
Grim Ace.
Yes. Thank you guys.
Thank you guys for helping us make the show what it is. Thank you for your contributions, which has helped us upgrade the studio, not only with new equipment, but the new table, the new lighting, everything. This is all thanks to you. This could not have been possible without your donations. It has been a massive help. So thank you very much. And we hope to pay it forward.
Love you guys.
We're also going to shout out here the fact, once again, for those of you who missed it at the beginning, we are talking about the Going Ogre Board charity event.
Go Ogre Board!
Yes,
www.goingogre.xyz. Do it!
Yes, indeed. Or you can find them at Going Ogre on Twitter. It's a great charity benefiting the Miracle Children's Hospital Network. It's got a lot of really cool stuff. There's a lot of great streamers involved. And again, if you want to hear me read some absolutely horrendous fanfic for Golden
Freaking
Bolt.
Freaking awful.
And Moriarty during the stream on this Saturday, check out at their website. They have their schedule where you can see who's streaming what and when. It'll be a great time. So definitely join us.
Oh, and hey, Mark.
Hey, Brian.
So I don't know if you realize this, but we use Pippa.io for hosting our wonderful podcast.
Do we?
We really do. It works for all of our shows, and it has been instrumental in getting the show out to as many fantastic people, and they're just about the best host we've ever had. We've had a couple now.
Absolutely. Pippa.io. Can't say enough about them.
Yeah, they are awesome.
Absolutely. If you're looking to start your own show, or if you already have a show and you want to find a better RSS network and feed provider, look no further than Pippa.io. They are amazing. We highly recommend them.
It was funny when we found out that they were doing a feed to an entirely different network that we'd actually had not even known about. Yeah. Where we're being shared here. Where's here?
Neat.
Wow.
Found a whole other group of people who apparently were listening to us, and I had no idea. Yeah. It's great. So thank you again to Pippa.io for being awesome hosts. We appreciate it. And we recommend you check them out as well.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. So you know what, dear Digitizers? Thank you for joining us this week. You can keep in touch with us at our website and our various social networking sites.
You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/digitalanddice.
You can check us out on Tumblr at digitalanddice.tumblr.com.
For email and soon to not be Google Plus, you can find us at digitalanddice@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. You can follow @digitalanddice on Twitter. Tweet, tweet. Also @voiceoverb on Twitter if you'd like to reach out to voiceover guy Brian.
I'm so sorry if you do. Also, donate to your favorite podcast on the internet.
Or us.
Or us by visiting patreon.com/digitalanddice.
Yes, indeed. That is patreon.com/digitalanddice.
Or Patreon.
Indeed. And don't forget, you can also touch base with us on our Discord channel. There should be a link in the description as well as somewhere on the page there if you're looking at us there. Or, again, wherever you can find us, you can find the link on our website. It's, I believe, somewhere on our Twitter.
Mark into making a dude emoji.
Yeah, there'll be a dude emoji soon. But yeah, join us on our Discord. We're usually available to chat. We're talking about a bunch of different things. There's rooms to talk about your favorite shows, whether that be, SGO, Hazardous Endeavors, Creature Pasta, their main show, whatever. We got rooms for that. We got some voice chat. Sometimes we'll play games. It's good stuff. So definitely join us on there.
Yeah.
And you know what? Also, check us out at our website, www.digitalanddice.com, where you can have links to all of our shows. You can listen right there on the website. And there's links to our Twitch, our YouTube, and everywhere else you can find us online.
You can also find us on YouTube and Twitch. That's actually a great place to find us for a lot of our videos and wonderful things there.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget, if you're watching us now, please hit that subscribe button and that like button. Let people know that we're here. Spread the word. Share what you like, because you know what? That's how we get better, and that's how we've gained the followers that we have. The community that you are out there is because you guys are out there telling people that you like us, and then they find us and they like us or hate us. Whatever works, as long as we're getting the word out.
That's true. And if you've got a moment, please, pretty please, just take a moment and leave a
review.
Review. There was that.
Yeah,
the word.
You found a word.
At wherever. Oh, look at that right there. please leave us a review on whatever service you ended up picking us up on. It really does help with their whole back end information stuff to actually get us to more people. And it really does help any review.
It really does. And we read all of them. We absolutely appreciate anytime someone lets us know that we're doing all right or badly. Let us know, because we can't improve until you tell us what we need to improve.
Yeah, if we suck, you need to be like, hey, Mark, you've ruined everything. What's wrong with you?
You had one job.
I have one job. But you know what, dear Digidicers? We're going to leave you now with a Legend of Zelda remix. This is The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, Time of Courage by AeroZ. That's A-E-R-O-Z. You can search that up. The links are in the description down below. To keep you entertained until next week, when we return with more news, rants, opinions, and general internet loot.
But never fear, we shall return.
And until then,
game on, internet.
Gonna start the thing.